Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pat Bay Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Anything John Deere, go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or give them a call, 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
They can get your parts, they can get your service, they can get your new equipment, they can do it all up there. So go up and see them.
Nice.
There you are.
Very nice. All right, so it's Sunday, August 21st, 2022, because we're going to replay this show. we can't. It's just stressful that an hour has gone by, and like, oh my gosh, we only have an hour left. Wanted to just add a couple more things from Bruce Sackman's bio. He is a recently retired, self-employed, licensed private investigator in the city of New York City, specializing in healthcare-related matters. And under contract, he had directed major investigations for large New York metropolitan regional healthcare system. He's a frequent lecturer on topics of medical serial killers, having spoken throughout the United States, Great Britain, the UAE, and Sweden. So you have found your niche, huh? Which is terrifying.
Yeah, and I don't have much competition either, I must say, because there aren't too many people
that are like, oh gee, I want to go investigate medical serial killers. All right, so when we had to take our break, you Baden had jumped into the grave to check for arsenic.
Yes. And next thing we know, I find myself at the Suffolk County Medical Examiner's office in the morgue. And, of course, I've never been in any place like that. And they're cutting open the body of the veteran to see what could be the cause of death. And Dr. Baden takes out his heart and he shows me his heart. And he says, "You see, Bruce, you see this heart? Do you think there's anything wrong with it?" "Oh, what the heck do I know? I have no idea."
You're like, "I like it under the skin, actually."
And he says, "No, there's nothing wrong with it. And you see, this death certificate that said myocardial infarction, that's baloney," he says. "There's nothing wrong with this guy's heart at all. Something external was administered to him. And we're going to find out how." Wow.
Well, had there been an autopsy prior? I mean, before the.
No.
Okay.
No. In these particular cases, there had not been. No.
Okay.
So, how do we find out about it? Well, this is the role of the toxicologist, and the toxicologist has to take tissue samples. But how's the toxicology going to determine what poisons could be in embalmed tissue? I mean, look, these people are buried and they're embalmed. And sometimes the embalming process, you know, could actually make it almost impossible to determine. So, well, first we asked the FBI lab to do it, and they declined. They would not do it. They had another case in Columbia, Missouri, that didn't turn out too well for them. Through no fault of their own, they tried. But you know what? They were just not interested in using their lab again. So we had to go to a private lab, a company called National Medical Services in Pennsylvania, the largest private forensic lab in the country. And I said, "How are we going to do this?" And the owner of the lab said, "Bruce, don't worry. We've got this brand new machine. It's called the High Performance Liquid Chromatography Tandem Mass Spectrometer."
Of course.
Well, that rolls right off your tongue.
Holy cow. How does it work? "Hey, look, Bruce, you wouldn't understand. You couldn't understand. And maybe you shouldn't understand. But don't worry about it." So we put a, you know, we put a sample in, and it looks like something out of a Willy Wonka, and boom, 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 and it comes out. And here, you know, the cause of death, we feel, in these patients, and it varied from patient to patient, so one of two drugs. Either epinephrine, which is adrenaline. And, you know, if you take a shot of adrenaline and it's not administered correctly, it could speed up your heart and kill you. And the other drug is something called succinylcholine. Succinylcholine is a paralytic given if they want to put a tube down you, and it actually paralyzes you while they do that. And if it's not done very carefully, of course, it could cause the death. And there's no medical reason that we see in all these medical records of these patients why they would have been administered either epinephrine or succinylcholine. So something that Swango would have had an opportunity to utilize while he was in the hospital. So Swango's in jail, and he's ready to get out, you know, for lying to the government and lying to me. And he thinks that he's just going to hop on a plane and go to another country and start killing again. Well, not so fast. Because, first of all, as luck would have it, the United States had entered into an extradition treaty with the government of Zimbabwe. The government of Zimbabwe had an arrest warrant for Swango, okay, for killing a number of people in Zimbabwe. And not only that, but we were prepared, and we did indict him with and charged him with the murder of a number of veterans at the Northport VA Medical Center. And then when Swango got out, I said, look, talk to Swango. If we go to trial, and even if you're found innocent, we're just going to put you on a plane and drop you off on the tarmac in Zimbabwe, where they're waiting for you. Good luck.
Yeah.
Well, he decided to plead guilty. And he actually pled guilty to murdering our veterans at the Northport VA. And later, he actually pled guilty to killing Cynthia McGee, that gymnast.
Oh.
You know. Now, at his sentencing, and the sentencings are very moving because at the sentencings, that's where the families get up and speak. And they talk about Dad, and they talk about how Dad was in the service and, you know, escaped death in the service only to be murdered at a veteran's hospital. It's very, very moving. But, of course, Swango, you know, he's not moved by any of this. He just sat there, and then he stood at attention in front of the judge, and the judge asked him, explain to me how you did this. And Swango said, I used a paralytic, he didn't say which ones, to murder these patients.
Wow.
And then the judge sentenced him to 3 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. But then the judge said something I have never heard before or since. And the judge said, Dr. Swango, right now under federal law, there is no parole. But if Congress should change the law, your parole is denied in advance. So he can't even get no matter what the law is. And he's in Supermax Federal Penitentiary in Florence, Colorado, with a number of other nation's highest profile murderers, and that's where he sits today. Well, after that case, and all of a sudden, when you're on the job and you have one successful case, you become the expert.
Yeah, right. So you're the guy now.
I'm the expert because I had one successful case.
Well, I have before we move on to that case, I got a question. You said he was administering adrenaline or these paralytics in hospitals. When a doctor orders up a drug, aren't there records to show that they check those out? Because I mean, it's just
well, of course there are.
Yeah.
Except what happens when there's a code that's called? And what happens if there are drugs on the crash cart and there's an emergency and you have to put the grabbers on those drugs right away to save lives? Well, the records then aren't as accurate as they should be. And as many a nurse will know, there are ways. I'm not going to go into them because I don't want to educate
anyone. Yeah, let's not train any new
people.
There
are ways to circumvent the record keeping, at least for a while. And if the hospital pharmacy staff is not really alert and not really up to their record-keeping snuff, you could get away with it. And for a long time, until all of a sudden somebody wakes up and realizes these drugs are unaccounted for. And I had a number of cases where nurses would actually divert drugs that were due for patients and used it themselves, and the pharmacy was totally unaware of it until a number of instances. So, yes, there are records, but, yes, there are ways to circumvent the system.
Sure.
They keep trying to make the system tighter and tighter, and they're doing a good job.
And who better would know how to circumvent it than a doctor or a nurse, because they're the ones handling it all the time, yeah.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Particularly in the ICU, and particularly when a code is called, okay? Now let's talk about codes for a minute, since since the topic seems to have surfaced. Well, what is a code? A code is when somebody goes into a cardiac arrest, and the bells and the whistles go off, and the staff comes running in. Pretty exciting, actually, if you're in this line of work. And this is an excitement that the nurses and doctors don't normally see in a regular course of events. So for some people, it's very, very exciting. And a number of my serial killers, this is where they excel. They excel when it comes to a code. So if you look in their performance evaluation, you would say, hey, Nurse Bruce, he's an okay nurse, but when it comes to a code, boy, he's outstanding. He takes charge. He starts barking orders at the young interns who are scared out of their mind because they don't know what to do. Oh, that Bruce, we're sure glad when he's around. If I never coded, I would want Nurse Bruce to be there. He knows exactly what to do.
Oh.
He shines. He's a real hero at that particular time. And that is something very common among our medical serial killers. They all excel when it comes to a code. And I could go through a long history of medical serial killers who have that kind of evaluation, including that doll from Germany that we spoke about earlier, Niles Hogel. Well, Niles Hogel just craved the excitement of a code, as did Swango, as did a number of my other medical serial killers, because this was their opportunity to shine. You see, this was an opportunity to utilize power of control that they never really had in their lives before. Many of them would complain, through my whole life, people always controlled me. People had power over me. Now I have power over them. And this is something they really enjoy. Niles Hogel, the German police, who did a very thorough job, they suspect him of killing about 300 patients. But they were only able to prove to the judge's satisfaction and then the nurse's own admission about 100 or 150. So these medical serial killers kill so many people, they can't remember themselves how many people they kill. People are always asking, how many people did Swango kill? He can't even remember. I mean, there's an estimate maybe 60 people. I mean, they don't know. They kill so many people, they actually lose track. They lose track of how many people they kill because they've got along away with it for so long. Now, Niles Hogel, and then we'll talk about a fellow in Pennsylvania, Germany, the same way, went from hospital to hospital. And when the first hospital suspected something, they never said anything to the second hospital, that never said anything to the third hospital, that never said anything to the fourth hospital, until finally there was an investigation and determination that he had been killing people. The German police exhumed over 100 bodies on the Niles Hogel case in 3 different countries. But for the first time ever, I think, in the history of the world, the German police have done something that I have not seen yet. They actually charged the managers who suspected something in the first hospital, then never said anything to the managers in the second hospital, then never said anything to the managers in the third hospital. They have charged these managers with aiding and abetting the murders. These cases are ongoing right now as we speak in Germany.
Yeah,
be convicted? I don't know.
Yeah,
you
can't just hand a suspected killer over to the next guy and make it their problem. I mean, somebody should have said something.
Yeah.
You would think, but this has been the policy throughout the world. Look, we have this bad employee we don't know how to, you know what, the best thing for us was have this employee go on to another hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to deal with it.
My mom was an elementary school teacher, and the crummy teachers that nobody wanted, they called it, in the summertime, they called it the Dance of the Lemons. And so during the Dance of the Lemons, you found out which rotten teacher was coming to your school that they kept just moving around. So this is your version of Dance of the Lemons. We've got to take a really quick break. I'm sorry. We're obviously going to need a lot more time. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone.
I'm going to take the music away from you. Wow.
Sorry, I couldn't resist the Randy Travis one. It's a terrible temptation.
Yes.
Okay, so I lost track of where we are. Where are we, Bruce? Bring us back.
Okay, so we were talking about nurses who travel from hospital.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
physicians,
yeah.
From hospital to hospital.
And that's big hospital, now during the COVID thing. That's a huge... That's
well, we could talk about that. We could talk about COVID as well. And I will definitely do that. Let me just give you another quick example of a nurse.
Sure.
We'll travel from Germany, and we'll go to New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And there was a nurse by the name of Charles Cullen. Charles Cullen was not only suspected of murdering patients in various hospitals, he was actually investigated internally in a number of hospitals because they suspected him of killing people. But they never called the police. They never called the state authorities. They did their own little investigation. And they were kind of sure that this guy was killing people, but then he moved on to another hospital. So, hey, not my problem. And they actually did investigations. Well, at the last hospital, when a nurse whistleblower actually notified the state and they did an investigation, the police went back to the other hospitals and they said, can we have your report of investigation on this nurse Cullen? And the hospitals didn't even want to give it to the police. They didn't even want to admit to the police that they had this guy under investigation.
Yeah.
Okay, and he went to about 7 or 8 different hospitals. In fact, there's a show coming out on TV about him, I think this year, called The Good Nurse. Fascinating. And
oh.
You will see how he travels. Yes, and there's a book by that name.
Yeah.
Excellent book. And you'll see how he travels from hospital to hospital. You know something interesting also about Charles Cullen? He attempted to kill himself maybe 15, 20 times. He attempted suicide. The hospitals knew it. But they were so short of people, they just kind of, you know, took him back. So one of the theories is that because he was unsuccessful in killing himself, he murdered patients sort of suicide through proxy. So he couldn't successfully kill himself, but he could successfully murder his patients through proxy. Pretty scary, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. And one other VA nurse that I had investigated that's in the book is a nurse in Massachusetts. Her name is Kristen Gilbert. Now, you know, my vision of a serial killer had always been like a Charles Manson type, you know, crazy-looking guy with a crazy haircut and a swastika on his forehead. Nothing really crazy. But here comes the typical soccer mom. And hi, Bruce. Hey, look, I'll be happy to talk to you. I'm taking my kids to the game. When they come back, we'll sit down. We'll chat. I'm sure this is a big misunderstanding. She was suspected of killing about 30 of our nation's heroes at the VA hospital in Massachusetts. And she used epinephrine. Remember, we spoke about epinephrine. And she actually went to trial. She went to trial because she said, "Not me, you got the wrong person." And the trial lasted 6 months. Now, could you imagine going to court every day for 6 months on trial? And the way we came up with epinephrine, you know, the lab, you remember that lab? The lab said, "Hey, Bruce, I have this machine. It's called a high-performance liquid." Well, you remember that, right? And the machine said she used epinephrine. And then one day I get a call from the lab, and it says, "Hey, Bruce, we made a mistake. We can't really say it's epinephrine, but have a nice trial." So how were we going to convict her without toxicology? Well, we were able to convince the jury that the deaths were consistent with epinephrine poisoning, even though we didn't have the toxicology to prove it. And we were able to show that she had access, that she was seen with the epinephrine, that she had epinephrine in her home. She had books on epinephrine poisoning. So she was actually convicted of murdering a number of veterans and at the Massachusetts VA Medical Center. And interestingly enough, her case was a death penalty case in a state that does not have the death penalty. Now, how could that happen? Well, because the murders occurred on federal property, the federal law, not the state law, was utilized, and under the federal law, there is the death penalty. And if the jury gave her the death penalty, she would have been the first woman to receive the death penalty since Ethel Rosenberg, the atomic bomb spy. So now we have a separate trial. First, we have a six-month trial to show, to prove that she's guilty, which we won, and now comes a separate trial to determine, with the same jury, to determine whether she should get the death penalty or not. And that is a very, very moving experience. Because the families, again, get up to speak and they talk about Dad and Dad's service to our country, and only to be murdered by Kristen Gilbert at a VA medical center. It was very moving. But the jury came back and they said no death penalty, you know, life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. And we were actually happy about that because she was a mom and she had two small kids. And we weren't bloodthirsty, but you wouldn't know it if you read the newspaper accounts, because the newspaper accounts showed that we were like the Gestapo. We were just anxious to hang her in the town square. Nothing could really, really be further from the truth at all. We were just happy that she was found guilty.
Oh, yeah, what a horrible...
And then as a result of these cases, what we did, and this is in the book, we came out with red flags from A to Z. You know, what are the red flags to look for to try to determine if, in fact, you have a medical serial killer on staff? And I could go through some of them if you like.
Sure.
Okay, so, you know what? And like I say, the first one, almost every case starts like this. Statistically, a patient's risk of harm, you know, injury or death, is significantly greater when treated by the subject. So every time Nurse Bruce is on duty, the death rate goes up. Nurse Bruce takes a week off, the death rate goes down. That's a red flag. Doesn't mean Bruce is a serial killer, the red flag. Another thing we notice is that these people like to work the, quote, graveyard shift, which means like 3 o'clock in the morning when there's really just about nobody around, okay? And we find, and this was fascinating, really fascinating in the Kristen Gilbert case, that the subjects of our investigation are uncommonly accurate in predicting the patient's demise. Now, this actually happened. And I invite all your listeners to get a hold of the trial transcript and read it themselves about Kristen Gilbert. Kristen Gilbert goes to her supervisor. She says, "The patient's tennis cutting guys, I'm around 6:15 tonight. Can I go home early? And the supervisor says, what are you talking about? We don't expect Kenneth Cutting to expire. I suppose if he does, you could, but why are you saying that? We don't expect it. I don't know. You know, I'm just asking. So guess what happens at 6:15?
Yeah.
Kenneth Cutting dies, and she goes home early. And I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. This is actually in the trial transcript. And like I said earlier, you know, these deaths were unexpected by the staff or family. And the family's not at the patient's side because daddy or mom is actually improving. So they'll visit dad and they say, look at dad, he's improving. Let's go on vacation and we'll see him when we come back.
Oh.
Only to get a call from the doctor or the nurse who committed the murder, not only telling him that dad had expired, but going in great detail about dad's last, you know, 20 minutes on earth and how he suffered and how he screamed. Because, you see, this is their second bite at the apple, their second bite of excitement, okay? There was a Daily News report that came out a couple of years ago, and it said, nurse accused of killing the least 13 patients at a state-run Italian hospital by giving them a deadly dose of a blood thinner, all right, heparin. Now, you know what's interesting here is, and the article reads, it says, a probe was launched last year after statistical anomalies. How would you like to be a statistical anomaly?
Yeah.
Statistical anomalies were flagged in the anesthesia and intensive care department of a hospital. A nurse is accused of killing at least 13 patients. See how many people have to die before the investigation even begins?
Sure.
And then we talked about the death certificates, and we know that the death certificates are inherently wrong. In fact, there's a famous case in New York about a number of death certificates in the borough of Staten Island that showed a very large number of people were dying of myocardial infarction. And the scientists said, what the hell's going on in Staten Island? Must be that pollution from Jersey that's coming over and killing everybody. Oh, it wasn't that. It was actually fraud. You see, the death certificates utilized were actually fabricated by the funeral homes because they couldn't get a hold of the doctors and the death certificate to bury people fast. So they just fabricated the death certificates. So it wasn't that they were all dying from myocardial infarction. It was all fraud. And then, of course, the initial review, and we talked about this, it always finds that the patients die as a direct result of their natural disease processes. And what happens is protective management actually winds up defending the person that's being accused. And crazy as it seems, even while they're under investigations, the hospitals often allow the suspect to continue working, to continue treating patients, even while they're being suspected of harming them. Crazy. And then what happens is that the employees often report the allegations to us, to the cops, to the IG, because they're just so frustrated with management. And there's an incredible case in Columbia, Missouri about that. Just an incredible case about how frustrated these people were. And there's a high probability, look, there's not going to be any witness to the crime. Nobody's going to say they actually saw Nurse Bruce kill people. The best thing they'll say is, well, we saw Nurse Bruce go into the patient, pull the curtain around him and the patient, and then the patient died unexpectedly. So the weapon of choice is, look, if I'm a murderer, I don't have to bring in a knife or a gun, you know, because there are so many sudden death chemicals available on the ward, particularly in the classical cot, some of which are non-detectable, particularly in embalmed tissue, even with today's modern science, okay? And when a patient expires, does the hospital, even if they suspect something, do they keep the syringes or the IV lines or the feeding tubes that are most likely the portals of entry if a poison is used? No, of course not. They throw that out. And when you look at a hospital crime scene, by the time we get there,
it's gone.
I mean, the patients have long gone. In fact, the crime scene has been scrubbed to surgical standards.
Sure.
I mean, where the hell's the trace evidence there?
Mm-hmm.
If you know where to look in the electronic equipment, you could actually find some trace evidence, which is another lecture that I give to the cops all the time about that, you know. You know,
right.
One of the things that we didn't see when we reviewed a whole number of these medical records is that the EKG strips were missing from the charts.
Oh, no kidding.
What happened to them? Well, the murderers used to like to take the EKG strips out of the charts or eliminate them electronically because that would be a roadmap to show us when the patient had expired and what event may have triggered something at some particular point to cause that to happen.
Sure.
And it's very interesting that the EKG strips were missing from the charts. And again, many of these people, as I said, perform best in emergency situations. They just love the excitement of the code. And many of them could be very charming and friendly, yet they do have some odd mannerisms. And when you do a background investigation, you find out all kinds of problems that they had in prior hospitals that were never, never revealed to the final hospital that the person is in. Now, sometimes, even while they're working there, and this is going to sound incredible, they're given nicknames by the staff, you know, like Angel of Death or Dr. Death. Well, you know what? The patients sometimes hear that. In the case in Missouri, what happened is patients said, that nurse, that Angel of Death, I'm not staying here. And he packs up and he runs out to the VA hospital. The VA police run after him. They bring him back in, and guess what happened to that patient that night?
Oh, he became really ill. There was a code, and his EKG went missing?
He died unexpectedly.
Oh.
Yep. Holy cow.
And, you know, and we find when we do these investigations that many times these people will research the particular drug they're going to use, even though they might use it periodically, you know, for legitimate reasons. So we'll find books on epinephrine or succinylcholine or heart medication, which is digoxin, which is what was used in the New Jersey and Pennsylvania cases by Nurse Cullen. So years ago, we used, before the internet, we used to go to the library, and we used to see that people would withdraw books on these particular drugs. And now, of course, we see that they go to the internet and they read and they study about these drugs. And, of course, the killing, thing about poisoning, you know, the definition of poisoning is really too much of anything. I mean, you could be poisoned with too much water. So the poisons are non-confrontational. It's not like the patient and the nurse are yelling and screaming at each other and then they get poisoned. It's non-confrontational. It's quiet. It's a quiet death. Nobody hears about it. And the subjects always, always have the same defense. The patient died as a result of their natural disease processes. And many of them have killed or attempted to kill, even outside the hospital. And some of them, it's just incredible how they crave attention. Nurse Gilbert, when she was on trial, she couldn't wait till the newspapers arrived so that she could read all about herself. And
oh, Frango, perfect.
He went on 2020 and a number of shows to, you know, deny his guilt. I mean, it was just incredible.
Double O Swango did?
Yes, he sure did.
Wow.
He sure did.
Wouldn't it be funny if he was in room 007 at the prison?
Online.
Funny.
So now to answer your question, why do they kill?
Oh, hold that thought. We have to take a really quick break. We're gonna cliffhanger them.
Okay,
cliffhanger people. We'll be right back. You're listening to
All
We
right.
the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Oh, thanks. We'll be right back.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Yeah, Behind the Murder Curtain, the musical. There's your theme song right there. God, what the heck?
So, Bruce, why do they do it? I mean, it seems like, it's an easy target, vulnerable.
They're mentally
people.
Defective.
Yeah.
Well, I will give you what I've learned over all the years of doing this, and I would say the number one reason that I have seen is something called Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Ooh.
Also known as factitious disorder, but I like the Munchausen name. What it is essentially Munchausen syndrome by proxy. An example is a mother might intentionally harm a child and bring that child into the hospital to show the staff what a loving, caring parent they are, even though there was really nothing wrong with the child, but they wanted to bring attention to themselves as being a really loving, caring parent. And Munchausen syndrome by proxy is then shown by these nurses who will intentionally put people into a code and show the staff and show the world what a wonderful, competent, caring physician or nurse they are when, in fact, they caused the code to begin with.
Mm.
But this is their chance to shine. This is their chance to no longer just be an ordinary person, but to be a superstar where everybody will look up to their skills and their compassion, not knowing that they're the ones that actually caused the code to begin with.
Well, that brings up the question, when people code, have they ever looked at reasons why? And maybe they didn't die. Maybe they just coded and they brought them back. They ever looked into a lot of the reasons why?
The answer to your question is yes, but no one suspected that the reason why they coded was the intentional actions of a nurse or doctor. In fact, when I do this presentation, I have a film, and the film shows somebody a patient at Ohio State University who says this. She says, "This blonde-haired, blue-eyed doctor." Doesn't say Swango, but that's who it was. This blonde-haired, blue-eyed doctor came in my room, injected me with something, and waved bye-bye.
Uh-oh.
Then she goes in a code, but they saved her. Fast forward to Zimbabwe, Africa. The patient says, "This blonde-haired, blue-eyed doctor came in my room, injected me with something, and waved bye-bye." But in both instances, what did we think? Hospital delirium.
Yeah, they're just
really happened.
That is such
but in fact,
a cold
it did
thing
happen,
to do.
God,
and nobody would believe them. So, in my experience, from what I've seen, that may be number one. But let me continue because one size doesn't fit all.
Sure.
And then for a number of them, it's just having power that they never had before. Some of them were abused as children. Some of them were always told what to do and how to do it, never actually had any power themselves, and now, for the first time in their lives, they have the power of life and death over someone, okay? And that is really, to them, extremely important and makes a really big difference. And there was a medical serial killer. His name was Donald Harvey. He killed people at the VA and outside of the VA. And this is what he said, and I'm going to quote it. When they asked him, "Why do you kill?" He said, "Well, people controlled me for 18 years, and then I controlled my own destiny. I controlled other people's lives, whether they lived or died. I had that power to control. See, after I didn't get caught for the first 15, excuse me, for that what? For the first 15, I thought it was my right. I appointed myself judge, prosecutor, and jury, so I played God." Wow. And that is definitely something that I have seen in a number of cases where people who were held back in their lives, who were looked down upon in their, on their lives, now all of a sudden had an opportunity to exhibit power that they never had before in their lives. Now, on real occasions, sometimes it's just as simple as eliminating this demanding or unruly patients. You know, you can't keep ringing that buzzer and ringing that buzzer. So in the case of this nurse in Italy, she says, well, don't worry, I'll take care of them. They're not going to ring that buzzer anymore. And they didn't ring that buzzer anymore because she actually did take care of them. And in very, very rare instances, we actually have, believe it or not, the profit motive. Harold Shipman in London, who killed about 300 patients, the way he got caught, Dr. Shipman, is that he changed the will of one of his patients and made himself the beneficiary. Well, the family didn't like that very much, and one thing led to the next, and then they found out that he was killing a number of seniors and had actually changed their wills and made himself the beneficiary. And
wow.
I think that was a lot, the psychological reasons why he had murdered. There were other reasons, but that's the way he got caught. And then in 2016, there was a very interesting news story in the New York Daily News. It said, homicidal hospice CEO in Texas ordered nurses to execute patients by overdosing medication in cruel cost savings plan.
Wow.
It seems, you see, that hospital care facilities are subject to something that they call an aggregated gap, which limits Medicare and Medicaid payments based on the average length of stay for a patient. So if a patient lives longer than the average, the provider may be forced to pay back part of the payments, giving them an incentive to prefer patients who die sooner, or telling to the staff, look, this patient Bruce over here, if he lives another week, we're not getting paid.
Oh, I'll take care of that.
Fine for taking the patient too soon. So you know what's going to happen to patient Bruce, right? He's not going to live past
that. That's unbelievable. So the management is actually dictating life or death.
Right.
Wow.
And that's exactly what happened in this Texas case. People can read about it. It's called Homicidal Hospice CEO in Texas. You Google it and check it yourself. It's kind of incredible,
yeah.
I would say. Really now, incredible. And those are the main reasons that I've seen over the years. But again, Munchausen syndrome by proxy and the power of life and death over somebody, that is really, really incredible in my opinion.
This sort of thing happens in smaller hospitals more than large medical centers, or the other way around?
Right in the crowd.
You know, I say it's been sort of a mixed bag. It's certainly, you know, as I think about it, it's kind of been mixed. It's been in large hospitals and then small hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think it was Erin, was it Erin or Bill, who you had mentioned the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And what's happening now because of the pandemic? Well, let's talk a few minutes about the pandemic, okay? We know what happened during the pandemic. Well, all of a sudden, the hospitals were overwhelmed with patients. So what did they have to do? They had to recruit doctors and nurses from all over the country very quickly.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have time to do perhaps the proper background investigation they had because, look, if the enemy's coming over the hill, do you have time to do background investigations on all your soldiers? No, you're just going to put them in the front line and hope that they stop the enemy from coming over. And I think that's probably what happened in some cases here. Now, I know of two cases involving suspicious deaths involving with the COVID pandemic. The first one was in Germany, And in Germany, a doctor has been arrested and charged with murdering two people who were in the hospital for COVID. And in Canada, right now as we speak, there's a trial going on in Canada involving a doctor who's accused of murdering about five patients who entered the hospital as a result of the pandemic. So did the pandemic increase the number of suspicious deaths? I would say yes. And remember this, during the pandemic, no family members are allowed in the hospital.
That's right.
They were all alone in there.
Well, and also, too, you've got the senior care facilities that there were a lot of deaths.
That's right. No families allowed in. So if you're a killer, wow.
Yep.
You're hiring everybody in sight, and they're not allowing the families in.
Yeah, because my dad in 2020, he was in a hospital for a heart thing, and that was legit. He did have a heart thing. It wasn't a heart attack, but it was some problem with the heart thing. And so we were told he was getting out. He was in Nevada. And we were told, oh, he'll be home on Monday. Get a text message Monday at 5:30, oh, your dad died.
Yeah.
It's like, Bill's dad was on a cruise ship. He was cancer-free. We could call at 4 in the morning that magically after dinner he died, complications of cancer that he supposedly was in remission. So,
wow.
Yeah, kind of. As we're both sitting here, we're like, We have a lot of questions now.
There's just got to be a tremendous amount of deaths that happen that aren't investigated. Like you say, there are people that had issues that may or may not have been.
Yeah, could have been totally, both of those could have been totally fine.
Totally fine.
So, Bruce, I'm super curious. As this all started, my guess is your inbox filled up with about a bazillion complaints from people who, I think there was something going on. This person died, that person. I mean, pretty much everybody who died now, they wanted you to go investigate.
You know what? Not as many as you would think.
Really?
Really, not as many as you would think. You know, many families also feel that, look, you know, dad or mom has passed, and it's just too painful to live go through an entire investigation and go through this day in and day out for the next, year or two. It's just too painful to go through something like that, and I can understand that.
I can too.
And I can see where that could play a role in how they pick these patients to give the dose to. I mean, no, these people aren't going to say anything. This guy.
Well, did you get to, as the inspector general, was it your call on what to investigate, or did it kind of come through the pipeline and they said, hey, we think we've got one for you, you know?
No, you know what? It came from the whistleblowers, from the honest, dedicated doctors and physicians who saw something, who went to management, who management poo-pooed it, and they weren't deterred. And even though we talked about how difficult it could be for whistleblowers, they went a step forward. And, you know, I'll tell you very quickly about the whistleblowers on the Kristen Gilbert case. Remember how I said, you know, nurse, if we drug tested you now, are you going to test positive for drugs? Is your license up to snuff? Well, these were the issues with the whistleblowers and the Kristen Gilbert case. You know what? They did have substance abuse problems. They did have licensing problems. And in spite of that, and they knew that this was going to all come out in the trial to make them look bad, they still came forward. They were very, very courageous. And, you know, after the case was over, and after Kristen Gilbert is found guilty, and, of course, everything they alleged was true, do you think they were welcomed back as heroes or not?
Oh, I'm sure that they were pariahs.
Exactly. They would hear, what were you trying to do?
Yeah.
Bring bad publicity to the hospital? Why'd you want to get us all fired? Why'd you have to call the IG? Why'd you have to put this hospital in the newspaper as the place where there was a medical serial killer? Why did you have to say something? Now all our jobs are at risk. And the reputation of the hospital, you know how many lives we saved here? you know how much great work we've done here? That doesn't mean anything anymore. Because now when people look at this hospital whistleblower because of you, they look at a hospital where people were murdered.
You besmirched our record.
And all our dedicated life-saving work means nothing now because of you, nurse.
Well, Bruce, suffice it to say, we're going to, in about 2 minutes, we're going to start begging you to come back on because we have so many more questions. We have had so much fun. And you've scared us, so I hope you're happy. Our guest has been Bruce Sackman. Behind the Murder Curtain, please go to the website and send the archive to somebody. It'll be commercial-free this afternoon at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Bruce.
Will go wrong. The odds are that